a lot of news stories today that I want to talk about that really had much to do with sort of the future path of our country. I know that's hyperbole. I'm not stupid. I get that that might be a little too much. But, you know, when you talk about, there are three stories that are really pulled out of the news today. One, of course, was the Department of Justice report on the Chicago Police Department, scathing, blistering, other adjective, report essentially calling out what everybody in Chicago knows, that, you know, for a long time, Chicago police, and not just Chicago police, I don't want to single out, just police in general, have been policing in their respective communities. And in some cases, that the tactics that they use to police and keep people safe actually violate civil rights. That's what we're talking about here. And some of the situations that were in the report were very egregious. And I'm glad they were caught by investigators. I'm glad that they're on paper. I'm glad that, you know, people are being called to the carpet for their actions. And a lot of them also are just about essentially, you know, what we all know, to things you can't tell kids who are loitering on the corner to disperse, right? They have the right to loiter. It may, that's not a, you know, that's an unconstitutional thing for a police officer to do, but come on, let's use common sense. But we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the report, which was a tremendous news conference today. And we'll talk about the winners and losers, all that. But the real big issue, and we talked about this with Mike Fouché, and we talked about it, we've been talking about it on the show for 2 years now, is how do you effectively police in 2017? How do you effectively police when criminals have gotten tougher and I don't want to say cunning, but they essentially have upped their game in the way that we've seen more lawlessness and we've seen more criminalization and we've seen, you know, there you can argue all day about what the reasons are for that, but you have seen gun violence in this city go through the roof. It's almost double in terms of the year before. And where does that come from? It comes from several factors, of course, and we've talked about it as well on the show. But truly, how do you effectively police in 2017 without taking away someone's civil rights? And that's what this report's about. And I think it's a big win for the Chicago Police Department. I really do. I think the number one winner in this, I wrote down a little winners and losers, the number one winner is a Chicago police officer. Because up to this point, the arguments that were being made, the narrative, if you will, that was being constructed, had everything to do with rogue cops, bad apples, racist cops. And this report that came out from the Department of Justice dispels the notion. There's some of that peppered in, and that will be what was salaciously is pulled out of the document. But what it really says is that the police officers today, in 2016, which is the year that they looked at, are just not adequately resourced. They're not trained properly. They're not told or trained or even remotely sort of up to speed with what they have to do to be able to police and not trample on civil rights. For far too long, we've been saying it's a police officer, it's a rogue police officer. But what this report says is no, it's rogue tactics. It's strategies. It's leadership. It's everything from people who are wearing more stars on their vest than the B cop that's on the street. And I think that that's the takeaway for me, is that there have been practices that have been handed down and handed down and handed down and enforced from the top by any means necessary. Let's clean up the streets, whether that was for political reasons or not, to make numbers look certain ways. But there was a mandate from above that essentially said, this is how we're going to police in the city of Chicago. Police officers, as the system is set up, it's very military in the way that it is all about discipline and it's all about rank and file, said, okay, that's what we're going to do. We're going to do any means necessary. We're going to ask for forgiveness instead of permission. And that is how we have done it. And maybe that's how the only way you could do it, with the resources that are allocated from City Hall or the State House or from the federal government. And they're just not enough resources to actually adequately train. I read somewhere that the investigators asked about the use of deadly force, and different officers couldn't actually come up with the reason or the right definition of how to use deadly force. And then at one point or another, they said, "Well, the training video. What do you guys look at?" And the training video is actually from the 70s. Hi, this is. I'm just thinking about it. So 1983, it's, hi, this is Dennis Franz. I'm on Hill Street Blues. This is how you effectively shoot a gun. So you can understand that, I mean, you can understand how that is a real source when you talk about morale. Politics, maybe not so much. And I think that's where we get confused as we talk about this story, this concept that, like, well, cops are really down because, like, Gary McCarthy, the former superintendent, likes to say this all the time. He said it on 60 Minutes. This concept that they're down, their morale is down because they don't feel like anyone has their back. That is true, but not in the way that he's talking about it. Could it be possible that they're down and the morale is down because they just haven't been adequately trained to do the job that they've been asked to do? And that's sort of where we're at. So I see this as a win for the Chicago police officer in the way that they can, if the Trump administration and the Justice Department and the city of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department can all come together and negotiate the terms, this could be a win. I don't know how it works. I'm not a scholar when it comes to criminal justice reform, but isn't the concept when you say negotiate, I would assume that they can come in and say, this works for us. We would like to continue to do this. Maybe it was illegal yesterday, but we'd like to see if this could be legal tomorrow. We'll stop doing this. We'll start doing this. I mean, that's the idea, right? Until you come up with the practices to reform policing. So I'd say a big winner is the Chicago police officer. I also think the big winner, is the communities. I think that they, for far too long, communities in Chicago, on the Chicago South Side and the West Sides of Chicago, they haven't had a voice. They have been part and parcel to this sort of strategy and tactic that has been employed or deployed by the Chicago Police Department for years. We saw it with John Burge. We saw it with, you know, complaints during Daley administration. We see it now. The whole city gets to see it with the Laquan McDonald video. Now they're at a point where it feels like someone heard them. So that's good to be heard. I think zero sum equal, Rahm Emanuel. I don't know if he wins or lose. I saw Charles Thomas's piece, and he was asking questions at the press conference about politics. Is this political because you're rushing it to get it done before the Obama administration? I don't believe that. I mean, I can understand that there might be some logistics in that, in the way that Loretta Lynch has a job to do and she needs to get it done by January 20th because she's gone, right? But politicizing that would be not doing anything. Letting your politics get in the way of all these egregious acts that you've investigated for a year and then going, well, this doesn't fit my narrative, so we're going to get rid of that. That would be the political, like dust it under the carpet, right? So for Rahm Emanuel, I think it's a win-loss in the way that I feel that he's going to get a win for the fact that he will be the mayor on record who, you know, forced by the Justice Department. But he will be, you know, he sort of talked about the idea ever since Laquan McDonald that he wanted to be the mayor who reforms the police department. He now has some ammunition in doing that. But he's also, you know, I think he's also in the loser column in the sense that this happened on his watch. I also think a loser in this is former Superintendent Gary McCarthy. The back and forth, the strange, no one called me, we called you. Accusations and everyone's lying about who didn't get called. I think it's pretty safe to say if the Justice Department wanted to reach Gary McCarthy, they would have. But there may be something in the fact that they didn't, meaning they see Gary McCarthy more as the problem than someone that needs to be interviewed about the situation. This is also strike two on McCarthy's record. You know, in Newark, the feds came in there as well to investigate some of the unconstitutional police practices. And here we are again in Chicago. So the sort of idea of any means necessary seems to be something anecdotally that seems to be what Superintendent McCarthy was pushing. And he had results, and we saw some, you know, some actual crime rates go down, which is always the conundrum. But at the same time, you also on this program and other places, you saw, you know, powerful people talk about wanting him out before there was even a Laquan McDonald video to see. So there was this sort of friction with the African-American community. And, you know, now you can understand why when you read some of these things that were investigated over a year, you get kind of a clearer picture of that. So I don't know what the answer is going to be. I really don't. But I do. I don't think that the system or the process will be at all manipulated by the Trump administration, the incoming Trump administration. I think everyone would be on the same page. There's much too much work, and I think that we're talking about some egregious situations here. But we'll see what happens. And like Loretta Lynch said today, the Attorney General, she said this is the beginning, not the end. So we will have conversations. We'll talk about it this week. We'll continue to investigate how this city can think about reform and this police department can think about reform and take your input as well. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk about a story that nobody saw because he got overwhelmed today. The story that Jason Grotto did in the Chicago Tribune about the CHA, the Chicago Housing Authority. We'll talk about that coming up here on The Download. Stay with us. The story I was talking about, the CHA story, another big ticket item. I mean, it's just a small story that's on there. But again, like I said, how do you effectively police in 2017 when you have, new criminals that are just that are more brazen and I guess running with lawlessness? And at the same time, how do you police in 2017 without taking away civil rights? That's something we got to figure out. That's what that was about. In the CHA situation today, Jason Grotto in the Chicago Tribune, he talked about a great story, and I've read this before, this concept that the Chicago Housing Authority is actually running a surplus. They've been able to pay down hundreds of millions of dollars over the last 5 years on their pension debt. And so, well, the CPS and the Chicago Police Department, the city, the state, everybody in between is having these pension crises as they're underfunded, their pension funds. The CHA is overfunded. They're completely up to date. The payment wasn't until 2024, something like that, but they actually paid it off early. They were fiscally responsible. The only problem is that the actual housing stock that they had promised to deliver with the plans for transformation, they failed. They did not hit the quota. There's a there's a waiting list for Chicago Housing Authority residents that's miles and miles long at this point, tens of thousands. And they have nowhere to go. And the Chicago Housing Authority, instead of taking those funds that were given from the state, from the city, to the federal government to actually build housing, public housing, after they tore down the high rises in Chicago, instead of building housing for the people, they chose to invest that money in making sure they were fiscally responsible. And so it asks a big question that we'll have to talk about on this program, which is, it's great to be fiscally responsible because, take a great look right now. Imagine if the CHA was in the same situation. They were going to the city and the state going, I need $300 million or we're not going to be able to have this housing and people are going to have to be out on the street. They're not. They're in a good position. But at what cost? At what stake? They actually cut down their housing stock. They did not hit the numbers they said they were going to hit. That essentially was the trigger to get the money. So instead of using that money to build housing for people who needed places to stay, they used the money to pay down their bills. And so the question as you think about, more and more we're seeing municipalities, whether it be suburbs or whether townships or whether it's, departments inside of a city struggling with their finances, trying to offer services, full services. The CHA took a different approach, and that approach is, we'll take care of ourselves. The people are going to suffer, but first we have to make sure that our house is in order. And I think that there's something there when you think about how we pay for services and how we budget moving forward, after this year, 2017, and the CHA took a different tack. And I think that, I don't know, is it more, I mean, is fiscally right? Is it morally right?
It seems like mismanagement. It's mismanagement. You're mismanaging your funds somehow.
Not nefariously, meaning they're not like buying big, having big parties.
It doesn't seem like it's malfeasance.
It's not malfeasance. No, it's, and I don't even think it's illegal. I think they just chose to say, we got to pay this down because if we don't, it's going to balloon out of control and it's going to affect taxpayers. But at what cost? And the cost was the people who are in dire need of public housing. They had examples in the story that were just like living in basements, and they're like, if my mom didn't have this basement for me and my family to live in, I'd be living on the street. And before you say, go get a job or whatever, housing in Chicago especially, it's just so expensive. And on top of it, this, I mean, CHA is not that, I mean, I don't know, it was the last time you checked what the rent was, but it's not like they're just giving it away. So it's just interesting to me that they did not hit the quota that they needed for the housing stock they needed for the, for you know, taxpayers in the city of Chicago, yet they were able to get their books in order.
I didn't see the story, Justin, but now that they're running a surplus and they seem to be on fiscally sound financial footing,
can they move forward?
Are they now going to move forward and get that inventory back up?
I think that's the idea. I mean, I think that that was the thinking of the CHA, you know, leadership was, hey, we're not going to be able to do anything if we have this albatross, this pension fund, you know, around our neck. But the question is, you know, it's not like they're making, it's not like they're making revenue, you know. I mean, these are all grants that are from the federal government. It'll be interesting with the housing, urban development. Ben Carson, he's in the news. But it's, you know, that's becoming a story that, you know, with everybody having fiscal problems, CHA is the exact opposite, but it's still a problem. So I don't know.